There is not much to be got anywhere in the world. It is filled with misery and pain. If a man escapes these, boredom lies in wait for him at every corner. Nay, more, it is evil which generally has the upper hand, and folly that makes the most noise. Fate is cruel, and mankind pitiable. We're on a happy topic this week, evidently. That quote comes from Arthur Schopenhauer, that famous glass-half-empty philosopher, a pessimist who sought to wrestle philosophically with suffering. Or perhaps you prefer this one. Life is hard. Then you die. Then they throw dirt on your face. Then the worms eat you. Be grateful it happens in that order. Our topic this week is on pain and suffering. Basically, why would a good God allow pain? The word for this is theodicy. Because let's just be real. There is a lot of pain in the world, and I'm sure I don't need to tell you that. And a lot of it is unjust. Natural disasters that kill a lot of people. Babies born with terminal diseases. Innocent people killed by an angry, sadistic person. Or by someone who fell asleep at the wheel. People pushed into poverty or into slavery so that someone else can get rich. And I don't think I have a good answer, to be honest. I have some thoughts, which I will impart upon you in the least painful way possible. It touches on creation itself, on eschatology, on Jesus Christ and his crucifixion. The harsh reality is that pain is inescapable. It is a part of life, even for God. So let's bite the bullet, rip the band-aid off, and explore the question of pain. This week's topic actually comes from a request from my one follower, my wife. No, I actually had several people requesting this topic, including my wife, but I don't really want to dwell too much on what my wife might be telling me with this request on suffering. But this is a reminder that I would love to hear from you and what topics you think I should address. Let me know if there are any isms or schisms you are wondering about, or just anything, let me know. But this is a two-parter. I don't want to deal with just pain. I don't like pain. I want a bit of pleasure as well. So next week's episode, we are looking at the pursuit of pleasure, which is called hedonism. So we're doing pain and pleasure. There are fewer sound effects in these episodes. I know you all love the sound effects, but finding appropriate sounds for the topics of pain and pleasure while keeping the podcast non-explicit is rather difficult. I'll let you provide your own sound effects if you really want. And actually, this first part on pain is quite long. It's longer than the normal episode and has taken me forever to write. But I think this topic deserved a longer treatment. So we've got to get through a long discussion on pain before getting to pleasure. Delayed gratification, if you like. So why does suffering exist? Why is there evil? Why would a good God allow that?
Why, God, why?
This question is generally reserved for the area known as apologetics, which is an important discipline, but not necessarily what this particular podcast focuses on. So in this episode, I'll come at it from more of a theological perspective, give a bit of a theology of pain, if such a thing is even possible. And I want to note that what follows is somewhat philosophical and speculative. I hope you'll forgive me for that. You are free to disagree with what I say, and that's fine. The problem of pain is such a significant issue, and people find all sorts of different ways to cope. My thoughts here are not necessarily fully fleshed out theological propositions, and I present them to you as possibilities, something to chew on, to think about, and maybe, hopefully, help a little bit. Before listening to this episode, I recommend going back and listening to the episodes on eschatology, the Imago Dei, and Christology. You don't necessarily have to, I'm not forcing you, but it might help. There are a couple of typical Christian responses to this question, kind of neat little answers that might help some people, but personally I don't find overly satisfying. The first typical response is because of sin. Pain and evil exists in the world because of the sin that humanity introduced. In creation, God created a perfect, painless, deathless world. But humanity messed up, and now all of creation pays the price. I'm not going to get into this too much, but suffice to say, I'm unsatisfied. There's a bunch of problems with this. Later in this episode, I'll discuss some of what Genesis says about creation, which challenges this response. But also, there are a couple of logistical issues here. First, according to the Bible, Satan was around before creation and rebelled against God, and so Satan sinned. So sin did exist before humanity rocked up on the scene. Second, humans were created with the capacity to sin, and if humans were going to live for eternity, then mathematically, even if sin had a 0.00001% chance of happening, it would have happened at some point, and God would have known this. So if you follow the logic, if God allows for sin, then he allows for pain. And we're back to square one. Sin can make pain worse. Murder, corruption, theft, unfaithfulness, abuse, this all causes pain, but I don't think that pain exists because of sin. Another response is that God allows pain so that humans can grow or be disciplined or something. The Bible says that God can use difficult circumstances, but I don't believe that God causes that pain with the goal of growth. I just don't think that God thinks, you know, I'm going to cause an earthquake over here that will cause a tsunami. It's going to kill a bunch of people. It'll damage the environment. But Sally is going to learn some patience, and Johnny is going to have one hell of a story. I cannot reconcile the idea of a loving God who would intentionally cause pain. Some might hold to this argument out of a commitment to a belief in absolute providence. That is, that God causes and plans every little thing that happens in the world. And so people need to find a reason for pain and suffering. And they think, I'm a good person, I'm a Christian, so this must be to my benefit in some way. The pain that I am feeling must have a good purpose. Sometimes that purpose is to glorify God. That is, through pain, something good comes about, and that good thing demonstrates God's goodness and glory. This is kind of a tautology. It's like the arsonist who sets a building on fire and then races to put it out with water and is hailed a hero. Yeah! So I don't find this particularly convincing. Another response that some people have occasionally offered throughout history is that God is punishing people through pain. It's a form of discipline. I'm not going to give this response the dignity of my own response because it's just kind of ugh. Okay, so why does God allow pain? Why is there suffering in the world? Again, the thoughts that I'm going to provide are not necessarily a perfect answer because I've had those moments, those dark nights of the soul, those faith crises, like everyone has. My basic answer to the question of why pain exists is because God has not yet finished creating. He's still creating, and he invites us into that process of creation. Have you ever worked on something and halfway through you look at it and it basically just sucks?
I think not.
And you wonder why you ever started? Like a painting, and at the moment there's just a bunch of squiggles and splotches of paint. There's a vague resemblance to a person's face, but it just looks like a nightmarish ghoul. And you hate it when people are staring over your shoulder.
Interesting.
I think creation is in that middle place, where there is a vague resemblance to what creation should look like, but we're not quite there yet. Within this, I'd say that pain is eschatological. If you don't know what that word means, go back and listen to episode number 1, Pain is part of the process of creation that will find its culmination in the new heavens and the new earth. So why would God not just create a perfect world in the first place, without pain, without suffering, without death? I kind of think that it's because humans are part of that act of creation. That is not to put ourselves in the position of the Creator, but that God draws us into the process and invites us to be a part of it. I truly, genuinely believe that what we do in the world today has an impact on eternity, that we are shaping what the future new creation will look like. That is what resurrection means, not throwing away what is here, but reaffirming it, redeeming it, not getting rid of creation, but elevating it. So what we do now will be reaffirmed and elevated and incorporated into the new heaven and earth. God invites us to be involved in the act of creation, in a similar way to how I get my 2-year-old son to help me with things at home, like gardening or unloading the dishwasher or putting dirty clothes in the laundry basket. It's a lot slower, doesn't always go how I had hoped. What my son thought was a weed was actually a broccoli sprout.
Uh-oh.
Some dirty cutlery gets mixed in with the clean. And somehow my shoes and the clothes I was going to wear tomorrow end up in the laundry. But I wouldn't have it any other way. My son gets a sense of worth and responsibility. He gets a sense of ownership of the house, respect, and a place within the family. We get to spend time together. I get to teach him. And I just thoroughly enjoy it. So I feel it's similar with God, just on a cosmic scale, how God interacts with creation. He invites us to be a part of that creation, to help shape the world, guided by his prompting. It doesn't always go the way that he might have wanted, but he can work with that anyway. I don't want to trivialize the issue because it is a real issue that we have to grapple with. Suffering sucks. But when people ask, why would a good God allow suffering and pain and injustice? I sometimes say, I don't know. I've never made a universe before. Maybe it's really difficult. That's completely tongue-in-cheek and might not go down well with people who insist that God is in ultimate, absolute control and that his creation is finished and completely perfect, but I always like to be a little bit cheeky. If the goal of creation is to create a world without pain and suffering, then creation is complete and finished only when there is no pain and suffering. So if, from the beginning, God created a world with no pain, then the goal would have already been achieved. But that sort of creation would have had no input from creation itself. Humans would not have been involved. And I believe that God wants humans to be involved, to help shape reality. I understand that that might be a weird way of thinking about it, and I'm sorry if it's confusing. But I do want to stress that in this I'm not elevating humanity to the position of God as creator. An analogy might help, again returning to the idea of a father and a son. I have been a parent for a whopping 2 years, so I know all that there is to know about parenting. And one of the things that I know is that you simply cannot mold your child into whatever you want. You have to let their personality show and their identity develop. They have the right to become whatever sort of person they want to become. So there's kind of a push and pull between child and parent. So in my son's growth and development and creation of who he is, he has a part to play in that. So I think creation at large, humanity at large, has a part to play in the creation of what it will be as we move ever onwards toward the goal of becoming a world without pain and suffering. Now, I don't necessarily think that we do actually have the capability of achieving that goal. We do need the divine act of resurrection, which was promised in Jesus' own resurrection. But we can have an impact upon what that eschatological new age will look like. I really think that we are involved in the shaping of creation, which is why the Bible, I think, has such a focus on the present and really stresses the need for us to act and to do. Christianity, my friends, is not just about the future. It is about the present. It's probably more about the present. It is about how we can live our lives right now in such a way that we can improve the world, even just a little bit. If in our lives we can make the world just slightly better than how it was before us, we've done a good job. Adam and Eve were commanded to till and to keep the world, that is, to look after it. Remember from episode 7 that Adam and Eve were priests within the temple of God's creation. And the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 writes this whole chapter about what the future resurrection will be like, and then finishes by saying, "Therefore, work, knowing that your labor is not in vain. Whatever happens tomorrow will happen tomorrow, but today, get out there and work." And you know what? The world is actually getting better.
Hooray!
Poverty, world hunger, child mortality, parasitic infection, the rate of violent crime is down. Life expectancy is up, as are literacy and education rates. More people have access to education, to the internet, and to clean water. There are better rights for women and children. Racism is generally decreasing, and there is increasing recognition of Indigenous peoples. There still are a lot of issues, a lot to work on. It may seem to some that the world is actually much worse, but that's not the case. We're just much better at reporting news, and social media and the internet makes that news instantly accessible. Historically, a lot of social issues and improvements have been implemented and pushed through with Christians at the forefront. So again, work, knowing that your labor is not in vain. What are you still doing listening to this podcast? Get out there and do something good. Actually, no, just finish this episode first. The German reformer Martin Luther was once asked, "If you knew the Lord is returning tomorrow, what will you do today?" And he replied, "I would go outside and plant an apple tree." That might be an apocryphal saying. That might not have been Luther who said that, but the point is clear. What we do today shapes tomorrow. What we do now impacts eternity. And yes, I believe the Spirit guides and directs us, and I believe that God works within the world and within history in a sort of sacramental way to bring about his plan. But that doesn't mean that it goes directly from point A to point B. And I genuinely believe that God draws us into that. He invites us into that creation process. And until creation is finished, the meantime is unfortunately plagued by pain. But doesn't the Bible say that creation is finished? Well, I actually think no. Genesis 2 verse 1 does say the heavens and the earth were finished. That sounds pretty definitive, but nevertheless, I take the Genesis creation accounts as poetry, written by ancient people who weren't concerned with presenting an exact scientific explanation for the origins of the world. So it's more of a final stanza that concludes what was begun with the statement, "In the beginning." There's also a lot of verses which imply or presuppose that creation has finished, using the past tense of created, phrases like "ever since the creation of the world" and "by the word of the Lord the heavens were made" and so on. So this is why I present this theory tentatively as one that is not a completely developed doctrine, but nonetheless, the Bible was written in a pre-scientific world and so didn't know how the world actually changes over time. They didn't know about dinosaurs, which is sad for them, because dinosaurs are cool. Just ask my 2-year-old. So the biblical authors didn't have any reason to suppose that creation wasn't finished. But let's quickly return to Genesis, where there are a few curiosities. First, death is already present. In fact, it's built into creation. Animals have mouths and stomachs and intestines. They are built to eat. They were instructed to eat. They were given plants to eat, not other animals, but they needed to eat. So what would happen if they didn't eat? And what happens to the food that they eat? It must die. It must break down as it goes through the digestive system. The moment you pluck a leaf off of a plant or a fig off of a tree, it dies. Second, pain is already present in creation. Look at what God says to Eve after she has eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I will increase your pain in childbirth. Increase. There was already pain. And just as a quick side note, I don't necessarily think that God is intentionally causing that pain. I think the author is trying to make sense also of why there is pain in the world. This is a question that goes all the way back, all the way back. Third, on each of the days when God looks at creation, he sees that it is good. And after humanity, sees that it is very good. Many people have interpreted this as referring to a perfect paradise, but this is not accurate. The Hebrew word for good is tov, which is actually closer to the word functional, or fulfilling its intended purpose. It doesn't mean perfect. So I think this challenges the argument that pain and suffering exists in the world because of sin. Because actually, there already was pain in the world before sin, before humanity. And when we look at what science teaches us about the world, we see a world that is in constant flux. It is constantly changing, evolving, adapting, dying, growing, and this includes humanity. Within the human body, 1 million cells die every second. Your body is literally, physically, a completely different body every several years. So you are changing. The world is constantly changing. The universe is expanding. So I think when we put all of that together, it means that creation is dynamic and fluid and active and ongoing. It is not static. Why? Because that is exactly what God is like. God is active and dynamic, not static. What will the finished creation look like? I think it'll look like Jesus, the risen Jesus. I think in the resurrection, Jesus embodies the future eschatological age. He is the personification of the unification of heaven and earth. In his resurrection, we see a synthesis of this earthly world with the heavenly. In him, we see justice and life, and we see what Jesus has accomplished. He still, after all, bore the wounds in his hand and side. The pain that was inflicted upon Jesus was not forgotten or ignored, but was seen by God and was dignified. Those wounds became badges of victory. In the end, when creation is finished, when Jesus returns and we are resurrected, when the world is redeemed, in the great eschatological new age, the new heavens and earth, we will be in a place which we helped shape, of which we have ownership. It will not be some other strange new place, but will be more intensively and more intimately home than anything else we've ever known. It will be us, and all the pain and the suffering that has happened in the world will be made right. I don't know how, but I believe that it will. That's the promise of resurrection. The wounds that we bear are seen by God and will be dignified and become our badges of victory. But also, what's exciting, I think, is that that just means that creation is finished, and that's just the beginning. Life won't end in that age. In fact, I think that's when it will really begin. At the moment, we're just in the incubation stage. In the light of eternity, all the pain of the present will be forgotten. But the final thing I wanted to say about this topic on pain and suffering is that God is not immune to the pain. God is not unaware, and he is not uncaring. He sees it. He feels it. In fact, an argument could be made that he experiences more pain than anyone else. If God is in creation, as it says in Ephesians 4, verse 6, he is above all and through all and in all, then he feels everything. He feels it all. He sees your pain. He feels it. He's right there with you in the depths. In Jesus' death on the cross, God experiences pain, physical, emotional, spiritual, shameful pain. God doesn't ignore pain, but he steps into it, takes it upon himself. God himself felt the overbearing might of a colonialist imperial power bear down on him. But the promise of Jesus' resurrection is the promise that God will deal with our pain, shame, and injustice. God will redeem our suffering and the suffering of the world. God is not distant, unfeeling, unaware. He knows, he sees, and will bring creation to fruition. And we will be a part of that. Another approach to this question is looking at it from God's perspective. If pain exists and there is a lot of money and a lot of resources in the world, why do humans continue to allow it? Why do we allow poverty and injustice and inequality and discrimination? Why don't we do anything about it? This doesn't answer the issue of illness or natural disasters. But we have it in our power to make the world just a little bit better. So we should really do that. So if you're still with me, I hope this has all been okay. Hopefully it's been interesting and challenging. Hopefully it hasn't been too painful. Thanks for sticking it out with me. I really do appreciate you. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would help me and the ongoing success of this podcast if you told someone about it, or if you rated and reviewed on Apple. Check out and follow the Instagram. I've been doing some fun stuff there. And let me know what you think. This episode was recorded on the traditional lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I look forward to examining more isms and schisms with you.